Hey, introducing Moshe Aberman, Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. Is a big one with Zoom with the Frating Shkolo on Hilchot Avilut. Continuing. Take it away, Rav Moshe.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. We are speaking, or we were in the midst of speaking about the process of the Tahara. We gave an overview, and as I said, I don't intend on getting into all the details of it. The overview of the Tahara, which includes two external washings, an internal cleaning out of any excrete, and then the pouring of 9 kabim of water. As to the amount of water that 9 kabim is, there are differences of opinion. You'll find some places will talk about 20 liter, there's even as little as 12 liter, and others will speak of 30 liter. It
These are
seems to
all
be something.
customs,
Was
would you
that?
say? This is
No,
all custom.
it's a question of how you measure. In other words, the way of measuring how they get to the amounts. I believe it's closer to 30 liter today. Rav Tkuchinski speaks about some kind of aspect that there were older measurements and newer measurements of liters. I never knew such a thing. I never heard of such a thing. But therefore, he says that it used to be 20, now it's 30. So that's probably approximately what they use. The pouring of the Tisha Kabim is the essence of the Tahara, in which we are theoretically making the body Tahor, because as we said, Tisha Kabim, 9 kabim of water that are poured on a continual basis are the equivalent, at least in reference to certain things, the equivalent of dipping in a mikveh. It is interesting to note that Rav Tkuchinski mentions that certain communities, in addition to pouring the 9 kabim, actually dip the met into a mikveh. I'm not sure, and I didn't have a chance to see if I could find any explanation to it, why one would do both things. In other words, if you put it into a mikveh, why do you need the tisha kabim? A sort of gut guess of mine is that the Tisha Kabim is what's mentioned in the halachic sources, and therefore they proceed with that, but then they put in an extra chumrah of tefillah. But again, I'm just guessing that. I just know that there is such a phenomenon. Some communities, some chevra kedishas do that, some don't. In any event, the more halachic requirement of tahara suffices with pouring of 9 cup. Now,
If you're in an
combine.
environment where it's not convenient to do any water, let's just say travel with a body for 2 days somewhere to do it, is the water, is the cleaning the body a ma'akiv situation where you're going to do that no matter what? Or no, just clean the
Technically,
body?
but technically, it's not ma'akim, and we'll see in a minute that not in all cases do we do tahara. But it definitely should l'chatchila be done, and I believe that efforts should be made. If you're traveling with a body, today, interestingly, to the best of my knowledge, for example, bodies that are brought from places in Chutz La'aretz, the tahara is done there, and the body is brought already in tafrichin, and so on. Though in halachic sources, it's
Hello.
clear that the tahara should be done as close as possible to the kvura. Somebody want to say something? Okay. So I don't know exactly what the considerations there are. It might be that it's simply because when it's there, the availability of the tahara is such, and often when the body is brought here, it's not done through bringing it to some Beit Levayot. In many cases, it's brought straight from the airport when the body is released to the Beit Kvarot. But in any event, that is what is done. The expected thing is that the tahara should be done as close as possible to the. I mentioned that in reference to what you asked, Bruce, because in the past, when traveling could take a few days, my sense is that unless there was an issue or, or concern of decay of the body, the Kahara would be done where it's being buried, and therefore, usually in the town or something like that, there would be water. But there could be a situation where water is, even if it's available, it's very limited. And I would assume that in certain circumstances, the same way as we will speak about in a moment, situations where there is no tahara, a situation where it's a question of using the water for tahara, or using the water for the preservation of life, I don't think that it would be a question that the preference would be the preservation of life. So that is the, as I said, the short, the process of the tahara, and the purpose is to get to that purification with the tisha kavim, the nine kavim. After the tahara is done, then there is again a process with different stages of what's called halbasha, dressing the dead in the tafrichim. And technically speaking, there are actually eight pieces of clothing that are put on, made as far as tafrichim. Again, I'm not getting into the details of that. Yes.
Because the non-Jews have, I think it's called a wake, where the coffin is open, they go to great lengths to use cosmetics and aesthetics to clean up the body so it looks as good as possible. Do we have something similar to that?
No. There's nowhere do we find any kind of attempt to beautify the body. Part of it is simply, where you find it by non-Jews, it's because the body is put in state or put open to people to see. So you don't want any kind of distortions. You want to make it look as appealing to the eye as possible.
They clean up the body.
No, they clean it. It's a tahara. You said cleaning is not putting on all kind of makeup, making it look.
Well, you might say that's kavod. It's kavod for the med when they do that. It's.
I don't know that that's kavod for the med. I think that when it's done by the goyim, it's respectful of the med because people
they
are going
up,
to
they do
things. You're coming up chopped. I can't understand what you're saying. Anyway, so there's no purpose, but even in situations in Israel where, for different reasons, bodies have been put sort of open for people to pass by, statespeople and all kind of other people of importance, even then it was always in a closed, it wasn't open for display. Therefore, that's not relevant. As far as lacha, what is relevant is that the body be clean, pure, acceptable. Let's put it this way: I never went to a goyish wake or anything to see what actually you see there. I did have the opportunity to because what they do in levayot here, at least, is before the actual levaya, they ask for a family member to identify, make sure that, you know, there wasn't some kind of fault in the body that they received from the hospital or something like that, to identify the mate as proper mate. I had the opportunity to identify both my parents, and it's not exactly, you look at the body, it's a braided out kind of body. It's not the way the body looked in life. So I'm assuming that the guy just put on his makeup to make it look more lifelike. But there's no purpose for that.
Is a kohen forbidden from identifying the body?
If it's a son, I don't think so. Because, for example, a son, are those who are metameh lumeit, and what would be the problem? Same way as you bury it, you company, I don't think that would be a problem. I don't remember seeing anything that prohibits a kohen from identifying. And let's put it this way, in many cases, if it's a family of kohanim, right, then anyone who would identify would be a kohen.
Well, that's what you have to ask a non-direct family member. You ask a cousin, wife.
The cousins were not really kohanim.
Well, the wife or a daughter.
I mean, it has to be a daughter or something. I don't know of any reason. There's no reason for a kohen not to, because a kohen is metame, but it's shiva kroh. It's one of the seven relatives.
Although there's only specific needs, and I wasn't sure if this was one of them. Because someone else can identify the body. I mean,
it's part of verification of kavura. It's part of the process of kavura, and it's done basically at the same time. We'll talk about it in a minute. Is the kriya done? So that, I don't know of any reason not to have a coin. A coin is there anyways. It's not made in any event. It comes into the room with a mate in any event. So he's there. So what difference does it make if he looks at the mate or not? I don't see a reason to say that a coin cannot. Okay. So anyway, the tafrichim I put on the mate, the tafrichim basically cover the entire body. That includes the sort of the hat thing that covers the face onto the neck. And before they cover the face of the eyes, there is a custom to put earth in the eyes, to shut the eyes. This has somewhat more of a Kabbalistic kind of idea that it's brought that the neshama can't see in Olam HaEmet if the body in this world, the eyes aren't shut, not covered, then that affects the neshama, and therefore the eyes are covered with earth. And there is some kind of idea that there's a value in earth of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the earth of Eretz Yisrael, if they have earth of Eretz Yisrael, they use that to cover the eyes. However, it definitely is not an akim. It doesn't hold back the ability to be kovar, because in situations where there's no choice but to bury somebody, let's say on Yom Tov, if there isn't loose earth available, you have to loosen up earth to do it, then you don't cover the eyes with earth. I would assume that once there were organized chavra kedisha, even in situations where they bury one way or another on Yom Tov, they make sure that they had earth for Yom Tov just in case. But logically, you see that that's not back. Then, basically, we've gotten to the point that the body has gone through tahara, has been purified, cleansed, and the tachrichim were put on the body. Along with the putting on the tachrichim, again, there are different things that are said, shikim that are said, and so on. But none of this, there's a customs that developed in chavra kedisha and things like that. None of it is ma'akim, the burial of the dead. But as I said last time, and some questions were asked as well about that, there are circumstances where tahara is not done, and as well, tachrichim are not put on the meat. We'll turn to the Shulchan Aruch and Yor Idea, Siman Shin Samach Daled, Seif Daled. Shulchan Aruch says as follows: Im Matzu Yisrael Haru Yikveruhu Kemo Shemitzauhu Belo Tachlichin. If a person is found that he was killed, then he is buried as he is found, without tachrichim. Rather, and he doesn't use that phraseology, but from the end when it says lo yachlitzu bo afilu min alav, they should not remove even his shoes. You understand that the idea is that the mate is buried in his clothing. The Rama adds, v'chein osim leyoledet shemita. So too is the custom to do with a woman died while giving birth. Ol mishin afal gamet. That's going to be something we're going to have to discuss. Someone who fell and died. Yesh omrim shemalbishim otam lemala mibigdehem tachrichim. There are opinions, says the Rama, that instead of putting the tachrichim on the body, you leave the clothing on, but you put tachrichim on the clothing. And the custom is not to put on tachrichim, not to make tachrichim for a person who was killed or things of that sort. Bury them in their clothing that they were wearing. And you cover them with a sheet, some big thing of material, like you would do with other mating. So first of all, if we just relate to that last phrase in the Rama, right? That you put a sadin on it. In other words, when if you've ever been in a levaya, you see you don't see the tachrichim of the mate. The mate is covered with something. And then there is, at least in many communities, a custom that the covering is a talit, preferable his own talit. By women, they use some kind of sheet, some kind of material to cover the body. And in certain circumstances, also with men, there's no talit or something, they would use a sadin to cover the mate. But the main issue that we see here from the Shulchan Aruch and Rama is that there are circumstances where even tahara is not done. Not only don't you put on tachrichim, but even tahara is not done. If we look at the things listed here, basically they fall into a category of things that death, but not a natural death. Person who's murdered, a yoledet, and a person who fell from the roof, etc. In other words, in these circumstances of a not natural death, there is a situation, at least possibly, where we would not do tahara, and we would not even put on, according to some opinions, tachrich.
What's the reason for that?
So now, there are two reasons that are discussed. The two reasons, A, differ in their whole perspective, and B, more importantly, they affect different circumstances as far as yes or not doing tahara. The two reasons that are given, one is an issue of blood that has been absorbed in the clothing or even the shoes. In other words, when someone is murdered, in most cases, murder, whether it's by stabbing, whether it's through with a shot with a bullet, whether it's with an arrow, a person was shot, whatever it might be, in most circumstances, there is a consequence of bleeding. That blood is, at least to some extent, or often to a great extent, absorbed in the person's clothing. The blood as a whole is not necessarily a problem except that we have a concept of dam hanefesh, the blood that determines life and death. Dam hanefesh, at least one explanation that I saw to it, is that if a person loses blood, he gets to a certain level, if a certain amount of blood is lost, he can go into shock. And if more than that is lost, he will die. In other words, anything that is beyond that level is called dam hanefesh. Dam, that it's lost, determines or causes death. The dam hanefesh is required in, we require dam hanefesh be buried.
But since in the course of the person's
one second. Since we never know what blood is dam hanefesh or not, therefore we basically apply it to all blood that need be buried. And therefore, since the body let out blood and the clothing or absorbed the blood, then person is buried as is with his clothing, with the blood. Yes.
So bloodletting used to be a technique probably practiced by Jews as well as a medical treatment.
Yes, sure.
Plus, in the course of someone's life, it's true that if one, let's say, is stabbed and then they pass away as a result of that and there's loss of blood, but in the course of their life, they've spilled oftentimes their blood, which is not included in the burial.
Correct.
Correct. So again, why in this particular case is it so significant to include?
Because we're wary that within that blood, we can't identify. We see a garment soaked with blood. We can't come and say this blood is certainly not dam hanefesh. And therefore, we treat all the blood as potentially dam hanefesh.
So if a guy bled before, he should actually save the rag that has blood in it from 6 months prior from an accident?
Good. Okay, so that's one reason. In other words, since the clothing, some in many cases even the shoes, are absorbed with the blood, we bury the person as is. Another reason that's given is what's called le'orel chema, to awaken anger. Obviously, to awaken the anger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu against the person who caused this death, brought about this death. And therefore, we don't put on the tachrichim, we don't even do the tahara, we leave the person, so kivyochol HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees it as the horror of what it is. So that we have two reasons, and those two reasons sort of are different, and we'll see in a second how they interplay with different circumstances and cause in the details of it some differences amongst the poskim in where we apply the halacha of refraining from tahara and tachrichim, and where not. Where you have a person who was murdered, bled out, that is the classic example. That's the first case in the Shulchan Aruch, Matzvui Yisrael Haru. Then there you have the classic example. Both issues apply. There is blood that's been absorbed in clothing. There is the anger. We want to awaken the HaKadosh Baruch Hu so that he punish the person responsible for it. And therefore, the idea is the person is buried as is. But some of the other cases are somewhat different. For example, a woman died in childbirth, a yoledet. And yoledet is definitely not an issue of raising anger. Because who's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to be angry? Himself? That he caused the death of this woman in childbirth? No murder. Okay. On the other hand, a woman in birth bleeds. And if it brings about a situation of death, then we have concern, wariness, that some of that blood includes dam hanefesh, but most of it is probably not. It's the natural bleeding of birth, but some of it is might be dam hanefesh. And therefore, from that reason, there's place to say that such a woman would not be put through tahara, and because we don't want to lose the blood, not through tahara, and not through putting on tahrichim, but would be buried in the garments that she was wearing at the time. Similarly, in the opposite direction, the case that the Rama speaks about, a person that fell by accident from a high place and died. In such a circumstance, there not necessarily is somebody who you are angry at, because it could have really been an accident. Nobody pushed him. Fell. On the other hand, we are wary, according to the Ramah, of a situation of bleeding. The Achronim, most of the Achronim here, make a distinction. And the distinction is as follows. If a person fell from some high place, but there is no visible bleeding, and we don't assume that this was done as a murder, then we will do tahara and put on tahrichim. Because there's no blood that we're wary of losing, and there's no issue of awakening anger. Therefore, as opposed to what the Rama says in the general thing, many of the Achronim disagree with the Rama and say that in a situation like that, we put a tahara and put on tahrichim. The other hand, person fell and therefore injured himself in some way, and there's bleeding, then, like the Rama says, we would refrain from doing the tahara. Similarly, a person who dies of strangling, hypothermia, situations where there is no bleeding, in those situations, both the post-game, the shach, bath, others, right, that we do a tahara, because it's not a question of bleeding. There's no question of anger at someone else. Boy, I'll let you ask the question, Bruce, one more thing. But if we find a person who was killed, even if there is no bleeding, but especially he was killed by a goy, threw him off the roof, and he died. There's no bleeding. According to many poskim, in that situation, we still would not do a tahara. We would leave him in the form that he is, because of the idea of awakening anger by a Kadosh Baruch Hu to punish those who are at fault. Yes, please.
Are amputations, are the body parts saved? Yes. To include
body parts are supposed to be buried.
And are teeth excluded, or certain other body parts excluded from that for whatever reason? If you have a tooth pulled, are you supposed to save it?
I don't know of any particular exceptions as far as that. Again, I may be missing something. I don't know offhand of any exceptions.
And it should be included, and somehow it's part of the body.
Right. So again, if it's an amputation, the person continues to live, then the body part should be buried somewhere. And there again, some condition. But the crowd have arrangements for things like that.
And if the amputation gets the body of a person, and they're told by the community, you know, this guy married her years ago, but yeah, she's not a Jew. Does that change the whole pattern of what's now going to take place? Or do they just, you know what, we're going to, it's a suffix here, we're just going to do what we do, and fine. Tahara, the whole bit, and bury, or is it everything stops.
You're talking about the woman who's not a Jew, or you're talking about
either one, the spouse. You know, there's something.
The person is a Jew. We will bury. There's questions about how particular we are about Murim and things like that. Again, today obviously still is, but it's less because there's so many not observant people. We fight, you know, Shanishban so much and so on. The non-Jewish person, again, if we really know it's a non-Jewish person, then we would probably not bury them in the Jewish cemetery. What is done in certain cases that in the cemetery itself is a section for non-Jews.
You know, this whole Torah process, I mean, is this process that...
First, you got to remember things from one week to the other. I asked you all these questions last week.
So okay. All the Torah is maintained. I mean, they find
that's this for, in the process. Anybody, you know, like, who we believe is a Jew, we will do the Torah. Okay. Okay. Now, there are circumstances that are sort of in between. And that touches on something that Bruce had thrown out before. A person is shot, is injured. There's bleeding. But he's taken to the hospital. He's still alive. The hospital has to do surgery, whatever it might be. They remove the clothing. In any case, for sanitary reasons, they're going to remove the clothing. Right? And they attempt to treat the person. But unfortunately, after a day, 2 weeks, a month, whatever it might be, the person dies. Okay. In this situation, there is no expectation that we leave the blood sitting around lest he die at some point. Right? That those dirty clothing can be thrown away with the blood. And should the person die, then he dies as such, and then since he's not dying bleeding, we also do a tahara. Even though the cause of death is an act of murder, but since the circumstances, both as far as bleeding, don't exist, and the idea of the oreh chayma, as the person is not lying as he was when he was shot, whatever, therefore, in those cases, we would do a tahara. The exception, if it's somebody who is still bleeding, try to treat him. Move this clothing. So try to treat him, but you don't succeed, but the body is still putting out blood, then there's wariness that some of this blood is dama nefesh, and therefore we would refrain from that. The greatest application of this whole issue is in the army, the IDF. And there, best of my knowledge, I'm not a Rav Tzvai, so I don't know the details of it enough, but to the best of my knowledge, any soldier that is killed is buried with his uniform he's wearing and such in a coffin. There's no tahara done. Same thing applies to people who were murdered in all kinds of terrorist attacks and things like that. If there's any kind of bleeding, then don't do a tahara. The army, as far as I know, because of that situation, and not to distinguish between mate to mate, all bodies are buried in a wood coffin. Because even though in Israel, the norm of burial is not in a coffin, the exception is in the army, where we don't want to distinguish between those who were killed in one way, those who died for whatever reason in another way, and therefore all soldiers, to the best of my knowledge, are buried in wood coffins. There is also, because of this idea of dam hanefesh, there is also a halachic requirement. If we find a person who's dead and there's blood around him, then we are meant to collect that blood and bury it with him. You will see, unfortunately, in cases where there are terrorist attacks, especially bombings and things of the sort, that you will see the right, the people who are responsible for it walking around with cotton or other things that absorb the blood. Zaka has these things to absorb the blood. They'll walk around, whether it's in a building or on the street, try to absorb as much of that blood to be buried. Single main team, others, we're not sure which the main team it is, but we bury at least these things with the blood with one of the main team. So that the, and there's an idea also, not only of preserving and burying the blood that's on the clothing, any blood around is also meant to be buried. However, if you have a situation where there is a person who got injured and someone comes to try to help them, to treat them, to prevent death, but in situations like this, there's often splattering of blood. And the person who's helping their clothing receive or get absorbed with blood, there isn't a requirement that those clothing be buried with the mate. The person does not have to lose his clothing. Where possible, what they do is they wash out the blood from the garment, and the water with the blood is poured into the burial site, into the ground burial site. Again, that's where it's possible. It's not always possible. The reality is that in certain circumstances, garment gets enough blood, it's not going to get it out, so it's going to be thrown out anyway. It's going to, and you could, if you want, to bury it with the mitt, but there's no requirement that a person lose his clothing because somebody else is dying and he tried to help. So even though there is halacha of burying blood because of chashash of dam hanefesh, however, we don't necessarily apply that to somebody else's clothing, somebody else's clothes. Those are the primary exceptions and the circumstances where we have agreement, disagreement as to and as to doing tahara or not, because of possibilities of murder or possibilities of bleeding. Just maybe add one more comment. Similar to what we said about a person who's injured, but dies due to his injuries only a few days later, similarly also with a woman who gave birth. A woman who gave birth, but alive, well, not dying at the time of birth, and then there are complications, unfortunately, and she dies. We don't treat her as a yoledet whose blood might be there, and therefore she gets buried without tahara. We do tahara unless there's still a continual bleeding, which we would be wary of as being dam hanefesh. Otherwise, we could do tahara with such a person. Okay, I think I've covered the exceptions, the cases. Are there any questions in reference to this issue?
And then the exact same procedures were done in a beit din, a killing by the Jewish court. They went through the same process as well regarding the burial. The tahara, the whole process.
I mean, put this way, some of the killings don't have any bleeding, and definitely there's no issue of awakening anger because the function is a bit on the contrary to do Ratzon Hashem. So there, you probably could do tahara. The only one I think is the saif, where there might be issue of bleeding. There might be a question. Again, I've never seen, being it's not a halacha l'maisa aspect today, I've never seen anything per se on that. I'm using halachic rationale and logic trying to answer the theoretical question. But definitely questions, you know, issues like chanukah, even stila, in those cases, the way it's presented, there shouldn't be leading. So in those cases, I don't think that it would be an issue.
This whole idea about awakening anger, did you give the source of that? It sounds very mystical.
Oh, yes, to some extent.
So what's the source for that idea?
I don't know that there's... In other words, it's brought down... I can't tell you, I don't remember where is the earliest source it's brought down. It's brought down by the poskim as part of the...
I would have thought there's a way that
most things I've seen, it's quoting the Achronim. It's probably a question of a tradition. But once it's an oral tradition that's been handed over, it's not clear how far back it goes. I don't know to tell you, where that
is. I would have thought there's awakening anger by spilling blood when the person's alive. You spill their blood, like the story of Cain and Abel. So, but once a person's dead, to try to collect the blood, it just seems like a strange idea. But
two things. The collecting of the blood has nothing to do with the anger. Collecting of the blood is really just for the reason that Adam HaNefesh, and therefore the blood needs to be buried. The collecting of the blood is completely that. The only place where it applies is the question of a situation where you have a person who's dead before you. So if there's an issue of blood, so the issue of anger is less relevant. There are circumstances. A person was murdered, was choked by a non-Jew. Okay? There's no bleeding. So as far as the blood aspect, it doesn't apply. And therefore, you would, from the point of view of the blood aspect, you would come and say that you should do a tahara. However, we find Ronim say you don't do a tahara in this case, the orer chama, to awaken the anger by a Kadosh Baruch Hu to punish the murder. I don't know, again, I don't even know it's so much Kabbalistic. It might be, to some extent, an issue, a social kind of thing. It's where Jews lived with that sense of persecution, that sense of threat, that any day, any point, some guy can come and kill them. It wasn't an uncommon thing. Then a form of turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying, save us, help us from these evil people, would be something that reasonably might develop socially. And I'm assuming that's what's behind it. Okay. So if there are no other questions in reference to this element, we'll begin with the process of what's called Chumsat HaMeit. Okay, after the Tahara, let's take it from our perspective, and it was different times and different circumstances, technically a little different. Now, circumstances, usually there is a Beit Levayot, right? A place where the Neit is treated, the whole Tahara takes place, and then there is another room, another area where the espading and beginning of the Levaya. After the Tahara is done, and as I mentioned, ideally the Tahara should be done in proximity to the burial, to the Levaya itself, then we come to the point of bringing the body out to the people. Hutzat Habeit. In reference to this issue of Hutzat Habeit, we find that before the body is brought out to the public, the immediate family is brought in. We're familiar with that. Usually there's a back room where the immediate family is brought in. The purpose is, A, to be there with the maid, and for those who have not done Kriya, because we mentioned that Kriya ideally is done when you are there with the person who dies, or as soon as we discover that the person died. But I said most people do not do Kriya earlier, and therefore before the body is taken out to the public, then do the Kriya. Members of the family are brought in, and the Kriya is done. As we spoke about the Kriya, including saying the Bracha and the Dayana Emet, and so on. There is an interesting point that is brought in this context, and that is called a cherub. There were many chevra kedisha, definitely here in Eretz Israel, who would declare a cherem, sort of a punishment of isolation and this disconnect to those who do not accept that the children of the mate, when it's a male, do not accompany the body. And you will see, especially in Yerushalayim, many chevra kadishot will tell the family that the children should not go accompany the maid. Ideally, from their point of view, after the hespedim, the children should go home. Others will deal with the kavura. The children will go and begin their avodah. In reality, most people are not willing to accept such a thing. And therefore, the solution is that they send the children ahead to Beit Kavarot, and they do not accompany the father. The idea behind this is very, very Kabbalistic. And Bruce, you like to hear that things are Kabbalistic. This is completely Kabbalistic.
No, I was told this.
Is that?
This was explained to me because many of our friends.
So this has to do. This has to do with the idea of sperm that was not properly used, and therefore there is a concept that sperm, if it doesn't bring to birth, brings about the creation or the birth of all kinds of demons. To the extent that a person who's relatively a rationalist, of Tykuczynski, speaks about, it's amazing, speaks in his book about the fact that now that they've created microscopes, then we see in the liquid of the sperm, you can check the liquid of the sperm, you see these things that look like bodies. There's the proof that there's such a thing. And he says that if they were to make stronger microscopes, this was written 100-something years ago, if this were stronger microscopes, then you would even see that you see the facial things of the father. It's taken to an extreme, but that is the idea behind it. But that same Rav Tykuczynski, after he writes all that, brings the flip side of it. That many Rishonim, and that's what's mashma in the Gemara, that the primary responsibility of burying the dead is on the children. So here we have a classic tension between a Kabbalistic idea and halachic norms.
And why is it only here to in Jerusalem?
Because the Chevra Kadisha, I don't know if only in Yerushalayim, but Chevra Kadisha and Yerushalayim are are in a very Hasidic orientation, it also became accepted in Yerushalayim. Therefore, they keep those customs as it was accepted. As Rav Tikhachinsky was in Yerushalayim, writes it as a given. This is the way they did it. Right? In his footnote, points out that this minhag we don't find in the halachic books. And then he says, "Umilfanim lahagu," and he puts it interestingly, in parentheses, even the Ari, the lavot avihem. Earlier generations, that was the custom. And somehow, this idea, this Kabbalistic idea, became prevalent, and at least in the Yerushalayim Chevra Kadisha, became significant. One solution is simply that you go ahead. Some of the Chevra Kadisha today, because of pressures, are less demanding, stringent about that. And they'll just say, it should be, but if a person insists on it, they'll let them come.
Well, the danger is to the children of the Met. I mean,
it's considered negative to the Met. It comes out, demons come and prevent the soul from receiving. Again, it's Kabbalistic versus halachic sources. I don't think that those Kabbalistic ideas, though they're found, discussed, should have that prevalence. On the other hand, there's an issue of respect, interaction with the Chevra Kadisha. Let's remember that the Chevra Kadisha are really doing a avodat chesed in dealing with these things. And on some level, we should also respect their things that they almost sanctify. And therefore, I don't think it's worth getting into a fight. So those who would allow, said their mothers, it's not a problem to accompany and carry out with fathers. I think that accommodation, that you go ahead to the kever, it's acceptable, is something that should be respected out of respect for the efforts and the contribution of the Chevra Kadisha, not to get into fights over that. There are enough things that the son can do, son, daughter, can do in the burial of their father, that I don't think that what would be respectful is to start getting into an argument with the Chevra Kadisha. But I do note that this whole custom is Kabbalistic. I don't know if they do this chayrim anymore because it's wrong. In other words, it's forcing a situation of problematic against people who think differently halachically. I'm not sure if they do. I've never asked Chevra Kadisha if they do this chayrim anymore. But on the other hand, I think that it's not worth getting into.
If someone has a burial plot at a certain cemetery, is that cemetery under the control of one Chevra Kadisha? And therefore,
there are sections. In other words, let's take Harem Nuchot. Harem Nuchot, there are sections of different Chevra Kadisha. I think Sanhedria, there's one Chevra Kadisha. Sanhedria. I'm assuming that Harem Zeitim is also different sections, different groups.
And they're in charge of the burial procedure?
Right. In other words, when you have a person who passed away and has a plot, again, if it's a plot that's previously bought in a certain section, then you, according to that section, you turn to particular Chevra Kadisha and they help you, they direct you. Okay, we'll stop here for today and we will continue with the actual spaking Levaya aspects of Yitzhak Hashem next week.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Rav Moshe. Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Boker Tov. Okay, let's see if I can do this. First of all, start video.
Oh, hold on 1 second. Let me just.